Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Time for another edition of Garden Talk. And today we welcome back Brian Huddleston. Brian's plant disease diagnostician with the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the UW-Madison and UW-Extension. Brian, great to have you back.
Good to be here, Larry.
And with us by phone today, Jason Fishbach. Jason is an Extension Ag agent for Ashland and Bayfield counties. He's grown some hazelnut trees and knows a whole lot about trees, shrubs, plants. He can talk about just about anything, I think. Can't you, Jason? Oh, wait a minute. It always works better if I push the button and turn him on. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
What's going on in Ashland and Bayfield counties these days as we think about a Garden Talk program?
Well, of course, it's Apple Fest weekend starting today, so it's all about apples and fruits and the great scenery up here right now. With the trees are at their peak, the maple trees and the aspen are just starting to turn. So it's a great time to be up in the north. That's for sure.
Well, I know we're going to talk some more about that the harvest trail that you got up there, and we'll get to that. But I want to ask Brian Huddleston. Brian, what are you seeing in the clinic these days?
Well, I'm still seeing late blight, of all things. We had a sample come in from Brown County that had some late blight. A variety of different things. We've seen a lot of rust diseases, actually, in the clinic this year. And so we had a sample on a weed vine that, and people want me to ID those. We see a variety of things. Oak wilt, we're seeing samples of Dutch elm disease. It's slowed down a little bit in the clinic, but we're still getting a lot of samples in.
Okay, so those are a couple of things to think about as we go through the program here. Every line's filled, so let's go to the phones. Arlene in New Berlin, let's go to you. Hi, Arlene.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. The reason I'm calling is I have flowers on the south side of my house. They're those. They look like daisies, but they're not. I don't know if it's that Rebekia. It's yellow with a black center. And, you know, it turned black on me. The flowers are still there, but the leaf and everything turned black. The other question is on my variegated red twig dogwoods, they get spotted all the time. And I'm wondering if it's because they are getting too large that I need to prune them back in the springtime. You know, so they get a little air going through them, or what?
Yeah, the based on your description of your herbaceous plant, I suspect it is a Rudbeckia, black-eyed Susan.
Yeah.
And actually, the disease that you're dealing with on that particular plant and on your dogwood are likely caused by very, very similar fungi. And there's another relative similar fungus that causes one of the more common leaf blights on tomato. The name of the fungus, the genus is Septoria. There are different variants of this particular fungus that can cause disease on a variety of different plants. But the three hosts where I see it on very commonly are tomatoes, Rudbeckia, and on a variegated dogwood. And your idea about opening up the canopy, pruning a little bit to increase airflow, that's a great idea for trying to combat these types of diseases with your Rudbeckia. If you have a large clump of that, I would suggest definitely trying to thin those plants or divide them and then space them apart again so you've got a lot of good airflow. Now, in a normal year, that really will help keep these diseases down. You definitely do need to clean up the leaf debris from those plants, cut back the Rudbeckias to the ground after they're done for the season, and definitely get rid of that material, clean up the leaves from your dogwood, get that out of your yard, because that's where these fungi overwinter, and they're going to survive the winter in that leaf and plant debris, and they will start to produce spores next spring when it starts to get wet, and you can start having this disease again.
As my understanding goes, that you should only prune bushes during the springtime when you can see where excess limbs are that you need to take out.
You should be able to identify that even in the wintertime. I usually recommend winter pruning, quite frankly, because from a disease standpoint, I'm less concerned about disease-causing organisms getting into those pruning cuts.
Uh-huh.
So I really am an advocate of doing pruning in the late fall, or sometimes we have that nice little warm period in late January, maybe early February, where it gets up into the upper 30s or lower 40s, and that's a great time to get out and prune as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the help.
No problem.
Thanks a lot for calling. Let's turn to Sue in Easton. Sue, hello.
Hello, hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm having some issues with a few maples that we planted probably 4 years ago. I believe they were probably two-year-old transplants at that point. They're quite large now. They're about 15 feet. But we noticed three, and they're autumn blaze maples. I don't know if that makes any difference or not. But we noticed that a few of them, half of the canopies are dropping leaves early. They're basically dying. And on closer inspection, we noticed that the trunks are actually, the outside layer is splitting.
Jason?
Is there anything we can do to save these maples?
Jason, what do you think?
Well, I wonder if the trees are still that young and that bark is, you know, still fairly tender, if it might be some sun scald problems.
I thought so, too, initially, because I do a lot of landscaping myself. But there are two that are actually inside the woods, so they're semi-shaded.
Yeah,
there's only one that's actually in full sun.
How deeply are these planted? Can you see a good root flare on those trees?
No, they're actually well planted, very well planted, appropriate level, and they do have a bark mulch on
okay.
the top.
Can you see a root flare though at the soil line, or does it look like a telephone pole as they go into the soil?
It's pretty much a telephone pole into the soil.
Then they've been planted too deeply. Really need to have that root flare right at the soil line. And when you plant them that deeply, that actually puts a lot of stress on the trees and makes them more prone to these cracks, what we call frost cracks in the trunk.
Okay.
And we see that a lot on maple trees.
I believe the mulch is actually covering that. So if I take the mulch away, perhaps that might help the trees?
Possibly. Were these bald and burlap materials by any chance?
They were potted.
Potted, okay. Did you notice any problems with roots that were kind of circling the trunk?
We broke them up.
Okay, that's very good. Because the other thing that can induce these sorts of cracks would be girdling roots. So
right, and we did make the holes quite large. It is very sandy soil, so it is loose soil, and we did amend the soil.
Okay.
And we refilled the holes.
Yeah, basically anything that can kind of stress the plants can predispose them to these types of cracks in the trunks, so you need to reduce stress. The main thing at this point, seeing that you're having a problem, is try to take care of this issue. If you can expose the root flare a little bit more, that's probably a good idea. You may want to supplemental water since you're on a sandier soil. So
right,
make sure
we do that now.
Okay, yeah. Do you have a soaker hose that you're using, or what are you using to water?
We used to use soaker hoses until we have issues with our pump pressure.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So we tend to drop the hose, let it run for at least an hour at the base, and then move from tree to tree.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The other thing you might want to...
I mean, it's a two-day process, and we've got 40 acres here of all new trees.
Gotcha. Yeah, that does become an issue. You may continue to have problems with those. My concern from a disease standpoint would be that those cracks can provide entry points for some of the canker fungi, and if you get those established, those will girdle the trees.
What about a tree wrap?
I would...
Is the tree wrap at this point
No. No, we don't usually recommend the tree wraps. Sometimes you might want to do that late in the fall just to protect things over the wintertime. But if you do that, that should come off immediately in the spring. And even then, I'm not a big fan of that.
Okay.
Because what you tend to do is trap a lot of moisture underneath that, and you tend to increase the likelihood of canker problems.
Right.
And Jason, Sue wants to get that mulch away from the tree itself, I would expect.
Yeah, if you're seeing the trunk going right down through the mulch and you can't see where it enters the ground, then it's too close. You want to see where that entry is, so you expose that root flare. The cracking, did it show up this spring? This is the first time you saw it? The cracking on the trunk, did you see it this year is the first time?
We had no issues whatsoever up until this year.
The reason I brought up sun scald is, you know, we warmed up so fast this spring,
and
we saw it at least up in the Bayfield area. We had sun scald and frost cracking on trees that they've never had a problem in the past. But we went from, you know, freezing cold with 3 feet of snow to 60 degrees, and it seemed like in a week. And so we were baking the south sides of these trees, reflecting off the snow, and they just couldn't keep up, and things cracked as the temperatures oscillated from day to night.
Yeah.
But,
so I start with the base and just pull the mulch away, make sure I see the top of the roots, and then go from there?
Yep. Yeah, and at this point, it's...
that we save them.
Yep, babying those trees as much as you can, and if all goes well, those cracks should heal over and the tree should be fine.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. I hope so. Great. Thank you very much for your help.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling, Sue. Appreciate it. Kathy in Greenleaf, it is your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. My question, I guess, would be for Brian, that I have some ornamental white pine. Want to plant some currants, and I know the relationship with white pine blister rust. Red Lake and any of those edible currants, are any of those bred so they don't transmit that disease, or should I just not bother planting currants?
I would really be cautious about that. There certainly are varieties that have resistance to white pine blister rust. That's the disease that you're concerned about. But unfortunately, resistance doesn't mean immunity. So you could potentially get some of the pathogen getting established on your currants, and then from there you get spores that are produced that can infect your white pines. How large are your white pines at this point, or your pines at this point? Are they white pines, I guess, would be the other question.
Yep, they are white pines, and one is more of a shrub variety.
Okay.
They're more ornamental,
mm-hmm.
but they would be in line where I would want to plant the currants for my garden.
I would be...
I'm better off just not to do it.
I would not do that, I think. That would be my recommendation. You just don't want to fiddle with that particular disease, because that can kill your white pines if it gets established.
You don't want that.
Oh, very good.
All right. Thanks, Kathy. Thank you for calling. And Donna in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Donna.
Hi. Problem is my golden raspberries. I've had them 3 years, and every year they get raspberries on the canes, but the raspberries never develop. They never get bigger than a small little pea, and they never develop. And the plants look healthy, but the raspberries never amount to anything.
Jason, what do you think?
Your site like? Have you had the soil tested? Does it receive plenty of moisture, plenty of water?
Yes, I had the soil tested, and the soil test came back fine for fruit. And this year, I thought in the two previous years, I thought it was too dry for raspberries, but this year we had more than enough water, and the same thing happened.
Okay. And so the fruit are initiating their forming, and they're just staying small and green and not sizing up?
Right.
Okay. And when typically are you seeing this, where they develop, but then they just stop?
Well, in the fall when they should bear. I mean, these are the ones that bear mostly in the fall. They're the golden raspberries.
Yep, yep.
And in August, all of a sudden these berries sat there and never developed.
Never did a thing.
Berries.
Okay.
And where are you located? Have you had frost yet?
Chippewa Falls.
Chippewa Falls,
no, we have not had frost.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have a good answer for you. You should see some sizing. If there's a moisture this year, certainly hasn't been a problem in the Chippewa Falls area. Nutrition status should be fine. The answer might be to try some different varieties of the fall bearing.
Yeah.
Are you seeing any leaf symptoms at all on these plants, or is it just the fruits that are a problem?
Yeah, the plants look healthy.
Okay. My concern with raspberry, and what kind of soil type do you have?
Oh, it's kind of sandy.
Sandy, okay. I do see problems with root and crown rots in raspberries, and that sometimes can cause the fruits to kind of abort. But usually we will see leaf symptoms, so yellowing or what will look like fertility issues with those plants. We have seen, because it was so wet this year, we did see a lot of problems with some fungi coming in and colonizing the actual fruits and causing them to kind of rot in place. Botrytis is one of the gray mold fungus is one that we've seen some issues with. There are some viruses that will cause some problems with fruit set, and those oftentimes come in actually through the root system. But again, I would expect to see some odd foliar symptoms if that was what was going on. I don't know what to tell you other than that,
okay.
Fortunately.
Sorry, we don't have more answers for you, but it might be where, I like Jason's idea about trying some different varieties.
Okay, thank you.
We have had, you know, experience with growers with the fall bearing. Some varieties just don't do well. You know, we're pushing the envelope because of our fairly short season. So if you're going to grow fall raspberry, you know, it's sort of a general recommendation for everyone is try a bunch of different varieties that you can and see which ones seem to do the best for you on your site and your soils.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Thanks, Donna, for calling. Appreciate it. We will take some more calls. Just to remind you, Brian Huddleston, one of our guest plant disease diagnostician at UW-Madison and UW-Extension, Jason Fishbach, Extension Ag Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties. Our guests here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in with your questions for our guests today, Brian Huddleston and Jason Fishbach, by calling 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. We had an email from Brian. He wonders if is it too late to plant red twig dogwoods in the Milwaukee area. Do you have a guess on that one, Jason?
Not at all. You know, I'm a big fan of fall planting of trees and shrubs. Okay. You've avoided the hot weather. You typically have plenty of moisture. The key is, as you get later into September and October, is make sure the plants are not actively growing, and they shouldn't be at this time. You should have that abscission layer between the leaves and the stems. The leaves are falling, and you can plant those. I would recommend you mulch a bit just to extend the season before that ground freezes. If you can get an extra couple of days, that just helps get a little extra root growth. But generally, it's a great time to plant, in my opinion.
Karen emailed and said her crab apples are in bloom. Can she do anything? What do you think?
Enjoy them while it lasts.
Yeah, Jason, any comment?
Yeah, that's
about it.
Doesn't happen all the time. And like Brian said, enjoy them.
All right. There's not much you can do about it. Wayne and Krakow, we'll go to you next. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm hoping you guys can give me some words of encouragement here. With the weather we had last week, we had 4 inches of rain, and the next day we had nice, heavy, sustained winds. And I've got a 14 to 15-foot tall, delicious apple tree that the weather took its toll on, I guess. The ground got super saturated, and the wind pushed it partway over. It's leaning at about a 40-degree angle.
Ooh.
It's partially uprooted. The upwind side, the ground is upheaved about 3-4 inches. What I'm wondering is, what is the probability of me being able to, you know, maybe take a garden hose and resaturate the ground and pull this poor thing back upright and stake it? What's the likelihood of survival here?
Jason, what do you think?
Yeah, that's funny because we had a windstorm a couple years ago, and the same thing happened on this on a tree on a road I drive by, at a property I drive by every day. And this thing fell about, just like you said, about 40 degrees out of the ground. And they pulled it back in place, staked it down, and tied it in place. And I thought, no way. But here we are 3 years later, the thing is doing great.
Okay, well, that's encouraging.
You're going to have root damage, no doubt. You know, it already, you had some, and as you pull it back, you're going to damage some more roots. But if you can get that resettled, you can get, you want to get the air pockets out of that root ball as best you can. So trying to be careful as you pull it back, put soil around those roots, water it, stake it, and hope for the best. You might see some dieback in the top of the tree as it kind of adjusts to its new root situation. But if you baby it and you want to hold on to it, I think it's worth a shot. Can't hurt.
It's loaded with water shoots that I did not prune this spring. Would it be of some value to prune them now?
Yeah, not now. I would wait till they go dormant.
Wait till it goes dormant anyway?
Which is basically a couple of weeks
at
this point. Yep. And then just be careful. You know, you don't want to flush a whole lot of growth. And what happens with water shoots often is it's called a bench cut, because those water shoots are going straight up from horizontal branches often.
Yep.
And if you cut at the top of that horizontal branch, it's going to just stimulate a whole lot more water sprouts coming from that cut. And now you've put a big stress on the tree because it's trying to push all that new wood in the spring. So you might be better off making some heading cuts on those at weaker angles to try to just take the vigor out of those water sprouts for next year. And then you think about the following year coming back and taking them fully out.
Okay.
But if they're coming off the sides of the branches or they're, you know, 60 degrees to a vertical shoot, there's no problem there. It's just those bench cuts that are facing straight up.
Okay. Well, We'll let you know in a year or two whether it made it or not.
Right.
Call back. All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Wayne. And let's see. Patricia in Madison, you are next. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning. In the spring, I planted a purple leaf plum or purple leaf sand cherry. I guess it goes by several names. And it's about 2.5 to 3 feet tall. The instructions say you can train it as a shrub or a tree. And I'd like to develop it as a tree and wonder if I should do the pruning of the extra branches on there now in the fall or wait till springtime.
The answer would be, in the dormant season, when you have time. Once the leaves are off and before the buds start pushing in the spring, go in there and prune them up as high as you want to a central stem.
So probably like in February or March, you're saying?
Yep, it'd be a great time. The only issue would be snow. You know, a lot of those, on those sand cherries, they're coming out of the base, and so you want to be able to get in there. So it could be just after snow melt, late March, early April is fine too.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Talking all things in the garden, including plant diseases, with Brian Huddleston and Jason Fishbach. Thank you for listening in, by the way. Tammy in Milwaukee, you're next. Let's go to you now. Hi, Tammy.
Hello. I've got some Shasta daisies, and this will be their third fall, I think. And every year at this time, all the leaves turn brown and die back to the ground, and I get new shoots coming, you know, new leaves at the base. And I'm just wondering what causes this, because then in the spring, they are tiny compared to what the size they were in the fall.
Oh. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, are the leaves kind of browning from the bottom up, or are you seeing top-down dieback on those plants? Do you know?
You know, I don't know. Right now, they're all brown.
That would be one of the things I would watch for when you see this happening again. If it's kind of starting from the bottom up, then I would worry about some of the foliar diseases. We talked about Septoria earlier, a fungus that can cause some leaf problems. It could be that one. There are actually a lot of different fungi that can infect leaf tissue, and we tend to see those when it's a little bit wetter. So as we go into the fall, oftentimes we'll see a round of these leaf diseases, and then sometimes another round in the spring. If it's a top-down dieback, I would worry about some root and crown health. Quite frankly, there are some organisms, fungi in particular, that can colonize the roots and crowns, cause some damage, and that'll interfere with water and nutrient uptake, and that'll cause some dieback. And that would both of those could potentially lead to smaller plants the following year. Unfortunately, without knowing exactly what's causing the problem, I can't provide you with much in terms of recommendations. If you're interested, you could certainly submit a sample through your county extension office, and they could get it to my clinic, and we could do a formal diagnosis for you and then provide you with more specific details on what to do.
All right.
Okay. Now, would either one of those affect like a spruce bush that's also nearby? Because it's in a kind of a triangle-shaped garden, mm-hmm. you know, by the sidewalk and driveway. And I have 9 sets of daisies, and each daisy does this.
Okay.
And then there's like 3, they're an evergreen bush with mm-hmm. a golden hue that
okay.
only grow like 2 feet tall.
Okay.
And then there's a maple, Japanese maple in the center of the whole thing. Would either one of those affect any of the other plants in that area?
The foliar pathogen probably would not go to the conifers. Those typically do not. If it's a root rot organism, those potentially could go to your evergreens as well. Are
okay.
those junipers that you're talking about, kind of a golden?
Yeah, I think they're junipers, mm-hmm. the golden juniper.
Yeah. Yeah, and what sort of symptoms are you seeing on those?
Nothing. Those look healthy.
Okay, those look healthy, yeah. It really depends on the particular organism involved. Sometimes
okay.
they will go to other types of plants, sometimes they will not.
Sounds like okay. they're not in this case.
So watch from bottom up or top down?
Or top down, yes.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. Let's go to Mary in Brainerd, Minnesota next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question about a black walnut tree.
Okay.
I received it as a gift about 12 years ago, and I was told I did not have to have 2 trees in order for it to bear fruit, but it never has.
Jason, what do you think?
How old is it again? Sorry.
12.
It's 12 years? Okay.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Yeah. Because it doesn't, you don't need 2 trees.
Okay.
I don't think. Do you? Here I'm talking. Jason, what do you think?
You know, we don't have walnuts up here, and I'm just not that familiar with
them. I don't think you need to.
With them.
And I have an apple tree about, 15 feet from it, and the apple tree will bear fruit, but I've never had any walnuts.
Hmm. I think you might have stumped us here.
Oh, good.
Where are you in the state? You're in Brainerd,
Minnesota.
Yeah,
Brainerd, Minnesota.
That's the north central.
I'm just wondering whether if it's far enough north, since Jason, you say you don't have them up in your area, whether there may be some issues with hardiness, flower bud hardiness.
Right.
Sometimes we have some issues with that on other types of trees and shrubs where the leaf buds are fine. They'll survive the winter, but the flower buds will not. So that's a possibility given where you are.
Very, very good guess, I think.
Where around your house is it planted? Does it have southern exposure?
Yes.
Okay, that would contribute to it because it's going to, the warm south sun, of course, will bring it out of dormancy sooner, typically. And it's a trick that fruit growers use. They'll plant early flowering varieties on the north slope to help slow them down in the spring or on the north side of something. And that may be just what these guys are talking about, is that you're on the south side in a cold climate. You know, Brainerd is right there in the middle of the state, and it's cold.
Yeah,
you might just be freezing those flowers in the spring.
Okay.
Yeah, because
I've never seen any flowers on it.
You could look around, you know, your neighbors or other parts, and see if there are other walnut trees that are setting fruit each year.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Jeff in Lodi. We turn to you now. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I have a filbert, a Harry Lauder's walking stick. It's about 5 years old. The last 3 years, it just seems to be declining. It, one limb at a time, kind of dies out. The leaves get spots on the edge that come in angular into the leaf. They're not a round leaf spot. And I took some limbs into the nursery, and they chopped them all up and said, gee, there's no dark streaking in the woods. I think they might have been thinking it was maybe verticillium wilt.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect that on that particular host typically, but it's something that I would check for too. There is a what's called Eastern filbert blight, which is a kind of a canker disease. It's fungal, and that will cause individual branches to die back. And again, you'd have to look kind of microscopically at some of that dead branch tissue to see if the pathogen is there. The other thing, if you're getting kind of a general decline in the tree, whenever you talk to me about those sorts of symptoms, I think about something going on in the root system or the crown of the plant. And again, some of the root rots, crown rots, again, these tend to be fungal as well, could be part of the problem as well. To tell you more than that, again, I'd need to see tissue in my clinic.
Okay.
The walking stick, the hazel, it's also on it's pushing the envelope to grow that in Wisconsin. It's not fully hardy to the region. And whenever you've got that kind of a situation where the trees just aren't doing very well in the winter months, they're just going to be susceptible to every other problem.
Yeah.
More susceptible.
Very true.
And I suspect it's a combination. It's just not doing well over the winter months, and then other things are piling on.
Okay.
All right.
So I could bring some samples into the diagnostic lab.
Yeah, what county are you in again?
He's in Lodi.
Oh, you're in Lodi. You could actually bring it down to my clinic if you wanted to. We're on campus.
Yep.
And actually, let me give you my website, and you can check on information on how to submit. It has our pricing information as well. It's P as in Paul, D as in David, D as in David again, C as in Charles, dot WISC, short for Wisconsin, dot EDU.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And again, it's pddc.wisc.edu.
That's correct.
Okay. Let's turn to Dennis in Eau Claire next. Dennis, hi.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, about 7 years ago, I planted three apple trees. I planted some semi-dwarf trees, two gallas and a Harrelson. They're in a group. The trees, you know, looked healthy, grew every year, and I pruned them, you know, usually in March. And they grew good leaves. 2 years since that time, since I planted them, they've blossomed very nicely. That only 2 years. But I haven't had an apple off any of those trees.
You haven't had any apples?
No.
Jason, what do you think?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things that could be causing it. If you're getting a bloom, and it's not every year, you said?
No, I've only had two years where they blossomed well, okay. Nicely. Yeah.
So if you're not having a, let's take those years where you're not having a blossom, that could be, one, too much fertilizer, so too much nitrogen. It could be the branch angle if they're growing too straight up versus more horizontal or at an angle. It could be winter injury, or it could be you see the buds are being frosted out, so they never actually open. They get frost damage beforehand. Okay. Typically not a problem with apples, but it's one to consider. Then you might look, once you do get flowers and you might even get fruit set, there are a range of pests that if they're real bad, say plum curculio, for example, can cause enough damage that the apples, tiny little apples, drop and you never really see them. I mean, you'd see something, but they never mature.
Yeah.
Did you?
I study them pretty closely for little, apples forming, and they just don't. They don't at all.
Did you have a lot of rain at the point when they were flowering?
Pardon me?
Did you have a lot of rain at the time when they were flowering?
Well, I had 1 year when they flowered nicely. We had a real strong wind. I think it was like in April, late April, when they were blossoming and blew all the blossoms off. So I'm assuming that year, right, you know, was kind of lost.
Right.
But the other year, like I say, there's only been 2 years. They didn't seem, I didn't lose any blossoms.
Mm-hmm.
And that was last year, by the way, not this year. Last year was another good year for blossoming, and I never had, I had one apple, I think, on the three trees.
Yeah. If it does rain a lot during the period when they're flowering, then oftentimes you don't get pollination. The bees don't like to come out when it's wet. So that's another thing to keep in mind that might be preventing you from getting some fruit set.
That and cold temperatures.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about pulling them out and planting new ones.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? Might not be a bad idea. Jason?
You could try some different varieties. Harrell Red is fairly similar to the Harrelson.
Yep.
That's one that tends to be recommended for more northern climates.
Yes.
All
right. Worth a try, anyway. Thanks a lot for calling, Dennis. Oh, boy. Jill in Madison, you have a question. Hi, Jill.
Hi. How are you today?
Great.
Good. I was wondering, is now a good time to plant a sycamore tree in the Madison area, or should I wait until spring?
I don't know that any time is a great time to plant a sycamore tree in the Madison area. Unfortunately, it's a little bit north in its range, and you can get them to grow here. And I don't get me wrong, I love sycamore. I have very fond childhood memories. I'm from central Illinois originally, and I remember sycamore trees in that area, and they're just stunning trees. I love the bark. The big problem that we see here with sycamore trees is that they get a disease called anthracnose. And on most other types of plants, particularly woody ornamentals, anthracnose tends to be kind of a cosmetic disease. But on sycamores, it can actually cause some branch dieback. And so it tends to limit their aesthetics when, they're grown in our area where it's a little bit, on the moister side. So you could certainly try planting one, and I'm like Jason, I'm a big fan of fall establishment of trees and shrubs, but you may have some disease problems that just don't make that the best tree for your landscape.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your help.
Yeah, thank you for calling. And Marilyn in South Range, on to you now. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I was out in the garden the other day and see that my Northern Lights azalea is flowering right now. I don't think it's flowered in the spring very well, if at all. I don't exactly remember. But I've got yellow flowers on the Northern Lights azalea that I have. Is that something? And it looks like there are more buds. Is that something to be concerned about? And
okay,
will it flower in the spring?
Well, what do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, if it's flowering, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. I guess the question is going to be, is it stressing it too much going into coming out next spring? Again, I think it might be like that crab apple. Enjoy it while you've got it. And
yeah.
But I wouldn't necessarily expect a lot of flowers in the spring, quite frankly, if it's blooming now.
Yeah, and, you know, like, is there anything I can do for next year that would make sure that it flowers in the spring rather than the fall?
Nope. Not, at least not that I know of. Jason, anything?
Not really, no.
Okay, then I will enjoy.
kind of a function of our growing season this year. It's been very long. And so oftentimes when we have long growing seasons, flowering plants will bloom twice.
Yep, there you go. Thank you, Marilyn, for calling. And Todd in Manitowoc, it's your turn. Hi, Todd.
Hi, I appreciate the call today, or being able to call in. The question is kind of similar to an answer that I had heard three callers ago, about the anthracnose, either virus or fungus. Mm-hmm. I help take care of my parents' property, and in doing so, have noticed that their maple trees pretty much are bare. We didn't go through any color change this year, just dealt with a really bad spot, and then the leaves ended up falling off. I read some stuff in the paper around here, and they talked about something along the lines of anthracnose. Just wondering what I can do. Is this something that's going to kill the tree? Is this something that happened because of this moist growing season that we had this year?
Yeah, certainly the moisture really did contribute to a lot of leaf diseases this year, and not only anthracnose, but a variety of other types of diseases. On these maples, given where you are along the lake, did you see kind of tarry, relatively discrete spots on the leaves by any chance?
Definitely discrete spots.
Yeah, but really almost jet black and looked like somebody dropped tar on the leaves?
Right, it really looked like anthrax, like the virus, you know, or like the bacterial infection.
Yeah, if you're seeing these relatively good size, maybe an inch across, kind of tarry spots, and actually if you look at the tarry mass, you'll actually look like there's a fingerprint in the middle of it. That's a disease called tar spot, and I see or hear of a lot of that along the lake. I've seen tons of it in Door County. I know Waukesha, Milwaukee counties in that area tend to get a fair amount of it as well. It's a fungal disease. The best thing you can do is simply clean up the leaves this fall as they come off the tree and get those out of your yard. That's where this fungus that causes the disease is going to overwinter. And then again, if you can do some pruning to kind of open up the tree a little bit to get better airflow, you may be able to reduce the level of the disease next year. But again, what you were fighting this year, quite frankly, was really wet weather, which is very favorable for this and other diseases. So, if you wanted to get into some sort of fungicide treatment for the trees, I don't normally advocate that because most of the time the disease isn't severe enough to warrant it. But that's certainly an option that you could consider. But I would wait another year to see whether you see the sort of severity of the disease that you saw this year. But I think good fall cleanup is your best bet at this point.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Brian Huddleston, one of our guests today, plant disease diagnostician with the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison and UW-Extension. Jason Fishbach, UW-Extension Ag Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties. Our guests here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Big thanks, by the way, to everyone who has phoned in or called in and made a donation, gone online and made a donation, that is, for our fall pledge drive. We're trying to take a day off the drive. We've already taken one day off the drive with 800 donations, and now our total's up to 1,183. So we only have about 400 more calls or donation. And by the way, any amount works. Go to WPR.org, make your donation now to Wisconsin Public Radio, and we get enough, we'll take another day off, which would be very good. It'd be a very good thing. Oh, boy. I want to go back to you, Brian, for just a minute because you guys have a new website up redesigned
website. It's revamped. Our horticulture website, UW Extension Horticulture website, has been revamped. It's now has a great search engine on it, so you can actually find things very, very easily. Same web address as before. You can actually, there's kind of an updated web address as well, but the old one works, which is wihort.uwex.edu, or you can just do hort.uwex.edu. Either way, you should be able to get to the website. Really looks very nice, and like I said, there's a great search engine. All of our fact sheets are there. You can just search for the fact sheets, and the person who called in was having a problem with tar spot. We have a nice fact sheet on tar spot. Just type in tar spot in the search engine, and you should be able to pull up that fact sheet.
There you go. All right, let's turn to Ann in Oliva next. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I have a red splendor crab, and I'm wondering when would be the best time to prune it. It's really, really uneven, and it has one side that faces, I guess, what would it face? It would face the south.
Okay.
That doesn't seem to be as full as it should be, and I'm wondering if that could be because it hasn't been pruned recently, or if it could be because of all the tent caterpillars.
Oh. Jason, what do you think?
Yeah, so pruning crab apples is difficult to do because when you make one cut, it throws out all kinds of new growth. And so you can, if you're not careful, you can make a problem even worse. So if you prune the heavy side, it actually gets heavier. You know, it could be tent caterpillars, things feeding on the buds that caused the problem in the first place, or just random chance of where the buds pushed. If you do some pruning, you want to, you know, be very careful. Make cuts that kind of weak heading cuts so that you're not stimulating that tree to produce a whole lot of new growth. Oftentimes, you know, the recommendation is you just sort of live with the crab apple that you've got because pruning can cause so many problems. It can be done, but it's just if you're not comfortable or, you know, don't feel like you know what you're doing very well, it might be best just to let it go. And if it's really bad, the tree, maybe you consider replacing it because the experiences with pruning crab apples are never very good.
When would be the best time?
If you do it, you'd want to do it at the same time most other, you know, woody species. So it'd be in the dormant season in late winter, early spring.
Okay, so early, late winter, early spring. So now would not be a good time.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. By the way, you can join in with your question at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We have some open lines. Get you on pretty quickly. And let's turn to Jeff in La Crosse. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
No, you're welcome. I was just wondering, I had a couple of bell peppers this summer that were doing fine, good foliage and everything on the vines, lots of peppers and everything, but a few of the early ones just turned into a big bag of water, and when you cut them open, it smelled like fermented peppers. You know, no holes in it or anything, but just they just turned into a big bag of water, and I was wondering what the problem could have been.
Probably all the water that you had in the former rain, I would guess, but what do you think, Jason?
It sounds to me like question for Brian, but I think it's bacterial rot where we saw that all over the place up in the north here this year.
Oh, all right.
You said from the outside they look normal. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. And then and then you could just pick them up, and all of a sudden it's like a big water balloon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suspect it could be bacterial. There are some fungi that will do that as well. And we actually had some that we had calls about where they cut them open. They looked perfect on the outside. They weren't watery like yours. They were firm. Cut them open, and there was black sporulation in the inside. And we sometimes, as the fruits form, somehow we get these organisms, either fungi or bacteria, that kind of get trapped in the developing fruit inside. So you don't see any sort of blemish on the outside, but there are these organisms there that will colonize. And unfortunately, there's not much you can do about those sorts of problems. They just tend to develop when the environmental conditions are favorable, and that's usually when it's relatively moist. So enjoy the fruits that you have now. And just kind of just throw those other ones away.
Oh, yeah, they're gone. I thought maybe they'd be like pepper wine or pepper beer, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
No, not a good idea to try to eat those sorts of things, unfortunately.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
You want a slightly more controlled fermentation if you're going to try to make wines out of plant material.
Oh, boy. Let's go to Jenny and Tomahawk next. Jenny, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I bought an apple tree, same as what I have had before, and it's growing. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I bought an apple tree this year and put it in the ground, and I've been watering it carefully and taking care of it, but it has the middle stem, goes straight up, is dead about halfway down. And to me, it looks like, right where it looks dead, that it was grafted. Now, they told me they don't graft their trees, but I, it looks, it has a funny look where it's dead. You know, it looks like it's been wrapped or something, you know?
Yeah.
And I wonder if I should cut that off now or wait till spring.
What? Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. When you buy a new tree and it's a whip, they cut the top off of it, and that's to force branching and the scaffold branching, and then the bud at the top, just below where they cut it off, will grow, and that'll be the new leader. And oftentimes that new bud is a little bit lower than they'd like, so maybe a couple of inches below the point where they cut the tree, and so you end up with that dead stub, and it looks like it's grafted, but it's actually just a side bud that grew to take over where the old leader was cut off. And yeah, you could nip that little stub back if that's what it is. It's no problem.
It's not little. It's about 4 or 5 feet long where above where it's dead.
Oh.
Mm.
Trying to picture what it could be here.
There is a possibility that there was a fungal infection in that branch and it girdled it. If that's the case, what I would do is, again, I would tend to do this when after the tree has gone dormant, when it's a little colder, mm-hmm. would be to go up down about 4 to 6 inches below where you see the dead tissue and then prune it there.
Okay, now do that this fall when it's colder.
Yeah, I would do it after the tree's dormant. In general, you don't want to do a lot of pruning when it's... The trees are physiologically active, and when it's a little warmer, because you run the risk of having disease-causing organisms enter in through those pruning cuts if you're not careful. And definitely, whenever you're pruning, and this is just a general recommendation, not only for your situation, but anybody's situation, make sure you're cleaning your tools between cuts. And what we normally recommend is to dip them in something like 70% alcohol, or use one of the spray disinfectants like Lysol. They're usually about 70% alcohol. And that will help kill off anything that you've accidentally got on those cutting surfaces.
Be sure to do that.
Definitely.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Michael has a 20-foot river birch. Move it now or wait till spring? What do you think, Jason?
Same thing for, you know, rule of thumb for all woody plants. Make sure the thing's good and dormant. So a lot of frost, the leaves are gone. You know, I like to wait till after the new year, so January, February, March. If you don't like to be out in the cold, you can prune in December.
But I think he wants to move the whole tree.
Well, he wants to move the whole tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, now is a good time. You know, definitely for transplanting. That's a pretty big tree to transplant.
Yeah, that was my thought too, Jason.
But if you're going to do it, now's the time as the leaves are coming off and going dormant.
And try to get as large of a root mass as possible so that you move as many of the roots as you possibly can.
And what about, Andy has a clematis or clematis in a container. How do you overwinter that, Jason?
What I would do is, and it works pretty well for a lot of these potted plants that are fairly hardy, is you can dig a hole in the ground in your garden, put the pot in there, and so the ground acts as insulation, and then you can mulch that lightly over the top, so with some straw or something. And that typically, if you get decent snow regularly, will provide plenty of insulation for a plant like that. And so you don't have to take it out of the pot, or you don't have to play with bringing it inside.
Okay. Dave in Madison, we turn to you now. Hi, Dave.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm moving a 20-foot birch tree. I hope he's got a good bank account.
Yeah.
But on the apple tree, you stated previous on earlier callers, you want them to go horizontal. Now, my tree is probably 4 years old. It just started producing apples this year. It's about 8 feet high. But most of all, the branches are going straight up. And now, I've only done minimal pruning as of now, but after hearing what you're saying, to get the branches to do what you said, to go horizontal, would it be better to stake it or start pruning them so that they prune outwards instead of upwards?
It's a combination, yeah, and you don't want them truly horizontal. You want them, you know, say, 60 degrees or so. And there's a couple ways to do that. You can prune out the ones that are growing straight up and leave the ones that are more horizontal. Or you can, at the end of that branch, you can tie it back to the bottom of the trunk there. That's one way. So you're basically tying them down for a year so they retrain themselves. You can tie weights on the end of it. It's almost like simulating having apples on the tree, that branch. The risk there is if you put too much weight, you can break that stem. Or you can use spanners. So it's just a little piece of wood that is pushing the branch out, and that'll be up close to the main trunk of the tree. So there's a bunch of tricks. The main idea is just to get those things spread out, so because they're going to want to grow straight up, and you want them to grow at more of an angle.
Okay, that putting the weight on, I never even thought about that. It's a great idea. But now when I do that, what would be the best ingredient to use, like an old nylon or?
To tie it to itself? What I've used the surveyor's flagging.
I'm sorry, what?
The surveyor's flagging, so it's just the plastic roll of tape. You can use anything. You just don't want something that's narrow that or real skinny that can bite into the bark. You know, if you use a piece of rope, it needs to be wide enough so that it's not digging into the bark when you tie it onto itself. Or you put a little piece of pad between the branch and the whatever you're using to tie it. Anything will work. You just want it to last for a year or so. And you may not want to look at hot pink surveyor flagging all year. So something that kind of blends in with the background.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Brian Huddleston, plant disease diagnostician with the Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic at UW-Madison and UW Extension. One of our guests, the other, Jason Fishbach, Extension Ag Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties. And he is here with us, and Brian with us. Great to have them here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Kind of on the harvest trail with this edition of Garden Talk, Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Brian Huddleston, plant disease diagnostician with the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison and UW Extension, Jason Fishbach, is UW Extension Ag Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties. Great to have them along and certainly looking forward to hearing what you have for questions. And there are lots of folks online. Jason, before we go to the phones, tell us a little bit more about the three-day event that's going on in the Bayfield area.
Yeah, you bet. You know, right now, working out in the counties, it's an incredible time to be working in agriculture. It's driven a lot by the consumers, as you know, more and more looking for, you know, fresher fruits and vegetables, farmers markets. They're looking for different varieties than what they can get the big box grocers. They're looking for assurances about how their animals or vegetables are raised. They want to know the producer, things like that. And what it's done is created a lot of opportunities for enterprising growers. And what we're seeing, you know, out in the counties here is a lot of new products, a lot of new producers that are really making some great stuff. And the challenge has been, how do we get awareness out there so consumers know how to find this stuff, how to buy it? Because some of these products are just great. And so what we've done is up in Ashland and Bayfield County is created what's called the Bayfield Shores Harvest Trail, and folks can learn more about it at bayfieldharvesttrail.org. And it's kind of a twist on the wine trail concept, but in this case, there's actually an online store that you can go to, and there's 49 products to date listed on there, all produced within Ashland and Bayfield County. Some of the, you know, frozen blueberries, frozen raspberries, jams and jellies, Lake Superior caught whitefish and lake trout, pasture-raised chicken, there's pork and lamb, just a whole range of products. So people can go to that website, place their order online, and then during the weekend of October 15 through 17, they travel the trail. They come on up north and pick up their orders direct from the farms. And it's a great time to be up here. The leaves will still be in color. And you can fill your freezer. You know, a lot of the products that are offered are designed as more bulk offerings, so like a variety pack of jams and jellies from Bayfield Apple Company, a 50-pound variety pack from Hidden View Farm of grass-fed beef. It goes on and on of these great products. If you missed out on blueberry season, you can still get a 10-pound box of frozen blueberries.
Yeah.
Well, it's really
sounds great to me.
Neat program to highlight the farms up in the region and a great opportunity. What the growers are calling it is taking a harvest vacation, help celebrate in the annual harvest.
And it's at bayfieldharvesttrail.org.
That's right. And from there, you can link to the online store.
Yeah, we have, you know, we're eating blueberries pretty much all winter, frozen blueberries. We even put them on cereal, oatmeal, especially in the wintertime. It's great. Throw some frozen blueberries in there. Ooh, it's good. Really good. All right, so BayfieldHarvestTrail.org. Let's go to the phones to Donna in Sturgeon Bay now. Donna, hello.
Hello. I am having a question about my phlox, which bloomed beautifully this summer with all the rain. But now I'm noticing that the leaves, which look really very healthy, and most of them are still very nice and green, have a white something on them, and I'm standing next to the phlox plant right now and noticing that I can just wipe it off with my fingers if I really try.
Yeah.
Is that a mold or what is this?
Probably the most common disease that we see on phlox, which is powdery mildew. It is a fungal disease. It's relatively cosmetic most of the time. If you're just now seeing it at this point in the season, I wouldn't be terribly concerned. You probably have a variety that has a fairly high level of resistance to the disease. Okay. Some of the older varieties, though, are quite susceptible, and you'll actually see the disease occur earlier in the growing season, and you'll actually get leaf dieback. So the leaves will actually turn brown. If you're just seeing kind of that white growth on the surface at this point, I wouldn't worry too much. Just cut back those plants this fall, try to remove that material. That's partially where the fungus will overwinter. And we had a good year for powdery mildew. So if that's the level of powdery mildew that you're seeing on your phlox this year, I wouldn't be overly concerned about it. We do have a fact sheet on powdery mildews. In fact, three of them. One is kind of geared towards powdery mildews on ornamentals. And again, you can go to our website, wihort.uwex.edu.
Yeah, I just copied that one down.
And just type powdery mildew in the search line, and it should pop up our fact sheets on that particular topic.
Okay. Now, when I cut this back, should I not put this in my compost, or
if you do real true composting where you get the heat in the compost pile, yeah, to fairly high temperature, and you're turning it on a regular basis, you could put that material in the compost pile. The high temperatures and the decay of the plant material are going to eliminate this particular organism. If you're kind of like me, where I kind of throw things in a pile in the back of my yard, then it's probably not the best of ideas to kind of leave it like that.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks for calling. And on to Lou in Algoma. Hi, Lou.
Hello, thank you.
Sure.
You just may have answered my question, but I'm calling about the tar spot.
Mm-hmm.
Just finding out from you that that's what my neighbor has on his trees, and most of his leaves fall in my yard, mm-hmm, and we compost. So I'm wondering if I can put those leaves in our compost pile.
Again, this is a maple tree with those tarry spots.
Correct.
Yeah, if you're seeing these sorts of disease, most of the foliar diseases you can technically compost, but again, you need to be doing good formal composting where you get high temperatures and you get really rapid decay of the material and where you're turning your pile on a regular basis. If your idea of a compost pile is just to have your material in the back corner and you're not doing anything in it, then I would tend to not include these sorts of materials in the compost pile.
No, we have a nice compost bin.
Mm-hmm. Just chop up the material real fine
so
that it decays rapidly, and you should be fine.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. And Norm in Slinger, we are on to you. Hi, Norm.
Hi. I have two honeysuckle vines, one that I brought around here, flowering honeysuckles. It has orange flowers, and one I bought in southern Illinois that has kind of a purplish-pink flower. But they both have developed last year. The leaves turn white, and the thing starts to look pretty sickly. Then they turn yellow, which I have it mulched with hemlock, both of them with hemlock mulch. So I think there maybe is a drainage problem, but then the other one that I bought in southern Illinois got the same thing. So last fall, I cut them right back to the ground. I thought, well, if they're going to die, they're going to die. They both came back and grew great, but now they have the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they're covered with yellow leaves, and it's not powdery mildew. The leaf itself is kind of a pale white all the way through. They look really sickly, and I'm wondering if there's something in the ground or I'm getting from my mulch or some other reason.
Now, honeysuckles of the vines are very susceptible to powdery mildews. I have seen, and that will eventually cause yellowing of the leaves if it's severe enough. Definitely double check to see whether you see any powdery white material on those leaves. If you're not, then I would be more concerned about possible fertility issues with that particular plant. You might want to do a soil test to see whether or not there's a problem with some of the micronutrients in the soil. If you have a digital camera and can take some photos, you're welcome to send those to me. I might be able to get a better idea of what's going on with that if you can send me some photos.
Okay, is there a website?
Yeah, you would go to my clinic website, which would be P as in Paul, D as in David, D as in David, C as in Charles, .wisc.edu, and there's contact information for me there.
Okay, I'll try to send you some pictures of that, because I figured cutting them back would fix it, and it didn't, and I'm just at a loss as to what to do now.
Yeah, I'm still suspicious that what you may be seeing actually is powdery mildew. It's just you're not. It isn't fuzzy enough for you to recognize it as that. But send me some photos, and I'll take a look at them for you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Marlene in Waterford, we turn to you now. Hi, Marlene.
Hi there.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a deck top garden that's all potted of my herbs and lettuces. The lettuces are just now really growing. They didn't grow all summer because it was so hot. But we're just in the next few days going to experience frost. And my herbs are tender herbs, and I'd like to bring them in. How do I do that? How do I, you know, clean out any bugs that have taken up residence in the soil? And
sure. Jason, what do you think?
Yeah, so, you know, where you, in the spring, you harden off the plants when you bring them out, this is kind of the reverse process. You're trying to baby them to get them used to growing inside. And so you do kind of the same thing. Bring them inside for a little bit each day. What you're trying to do is encourage any new growth to not have quite the same waxy cuticle, to be a little bit more adapted to the indoor conditions. So you can do that over a period of week. Now, when we have frost coming up, certainly bring them in at night there, but gradually transition them inside. And then when you're ready to bring them in for the last time, give them a good wash. Try to get as much of the bugs off there as you can. You'll probably still bring something in with you, so you might look at something like a safer soap to clean them up. But it can work well. Now, with the edible herbs, I don't like to treat those with anything, so it's a good washing, and then you just take your chances. Keep them in full sun. I would just go with just water,
Yep. Okay.
And then put them in when they're inside. Of course, the better the growing conditions, the more likely they're going to transition well. So a nice bright sunny south window.
Okay.
And
I'm sorry?
You should expect to see the plants not look so happy starting off as they adjust, but the new growth as that's adapted should be a little bit better. And also be careful with your watering. They're not going to transpire as much, so you don't need to water quite as much as when they're outside, especially on a sunny porch.
Okay. The other piece is how do I don't want – I have indoor plants too, and I really don't want to bring pests in – to attack my indoor plants.
Okay. You can, oftentimes those insects aren't moving very far. Things like scale don't move very far. So if you can bring them into a part of the house where the other plants aren't, if you've got a sunroom or something else that's not quite inside, like a mud room, that can be useful. But if you wash them well, that can be oftentimes good enough to get the bugs off, and if you do have a problem, then you just have to deal with it on the other houseplants. That's just a risk you take whenever you bring plants in from the outside.
Yep, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. John and Lac de Flambeau, your turn. Hi, John.
Yeah, I have a beautiful garden on top of my roof, and it consists of several types of moss. I mean, it's just growing like crazy between the shingles, where the shingles overlap. About one-third of the roof is covered with this moss, and I've never had that before, and I'm wondering, A, what to do about it, and B, what might have caused such growth of this plant this year.
Yeah. Well, it's probably a shade and moisture issue, Jason.
Yeah, it's definitely, we've had a lot more rain, at least up here, than we have in the last few years, so that can contribute to it. The other thing to look is there new shade on your roof that's caused by, that hasn't been there the last few years, that's caused by a tree that's getting bigger? I mean, that's just something to consider because, like Larry said, it's a combination of shade and moisture that allows that moss to grow.
Well, I appreciate that. I have about one-third of the roof is shaded with big pine trees, and they drop a lot of needles, and it seems to, I don't know if that has anything to do about the growth. I know it's been and it's been wet, but how do I get rid of that stuff?
By the way, are you recommending the copper strips anymore, Jason, or along the roof line?
Yeah, I don't deal with this very often, so I'm not exactly sure the best way to handle that so that you're not damaging your shingles or your roof.
One of the things that people do is, I know from other shows, is to put a copper strip along the top of the roof, and then when the rain hits the copper, it sends a little bit of essentially poison that can kill the moss.
Okay, well.
It's worth a try, and you could carefully try to remove some of the moss that's there now, but you don't want to be taking, you know, if you got shingles, you don't want to be taking the sort of the sand or whatever, the grit off the shingles. But you can remove some of it, and then I'd put that strip up. And then there's strips other than copper, too.
The other thing that may be happening, if those pine needles, it's kind of a critical mass issue. If you had a little bit of moss growing and they're trapping some of those needles, that provides a little bit more medium for more moss to grow. And finally, it's the tipping point happened this year.
Yeah.
Might be looking at making sure those pine needles are coming off the roof.
That's a good point.
Well, the upside of it is just beautiful. You should see these things. They're bright green, and they're absolutely terrific. I mean, I've taken photographs, snapshots, and sending it all over the world to show my roof garden. Okay, thank you for your help.
Thanks, John, for calling. Mark in La Crosse has a lilac with bacterial blight. Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, if you're dealing with that particular disease, that's a little bit of a tough one to manage because the bacterium that causes that disease lives naturally on the leaves, oftentimes without causing disease. It's part of the normal, what we call microflora on the leaf surface. And so it really depends on environmental conditions. If it's relatively wet, moist, we get large increases in this organism, and then it can cause leaf spotting and also tip dieback. If you're seeing the symptoms, the best thing to do is to prune out those dead tips. I usually recommend for a bacterial disease like this to go back about 8 to 10 inches below where you see the dead tissue and prune that out, and then be very, very careful to disinfest tools, again, with alcohol as you're pruning. And not as critical with this disease because this bacterium is everywhere. The other interesting thing about this organism is that it's an ice nucleator. So there's actually a protein in its outer membrane that mimics ice crystals. And so if you've got high populations of this organism on plants, it can actually make them more sensitive to frost injury.
Oh.
So sometimes we get a combination of them inducing this frost injury, and then they're able to colonize the tissue and cause additional disease. There are some chemical controls if you want to go that route. Again, I don't normally recommend these for homeowners, but certainly some of the copper-containing products if they're applied at the appropriate time. So again, you want to get these on early to try to keep the populations down. Those can help provide some control as well. If you've got a shrub that chronically gets the disease every year, sometimes the best sort of pruning to do is what we call a basal prune, which is right at the ground line. Remove the shrub and put in a different variety that's less likely to have a problem.
All right, let's go to Brian and Nina next. Brian, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
All right. Brian, I think it was you on the air a few weeks back when I heard about a caller talking about Creeping Charlie. And I've got a problem, and I don't know if it is Creeping Charlie or not, but in my lawn, I don't want it. It is plush, it is green, but it... over. It's like one third of my grass is gone. And
yeah.
Does it like moisture?
Well, it likes
pretty much
anything. It's quite a weedy plant if that's what you have. And Jason, definitely chime in here because I'm not really a weed expert. But does it have purple flowers?
Pardon me?
Does it have purple flowers?
I never let it get that. Well, yeah, actually, yes, I have seen purple flowers.
Yeah, and kind of heart shade leaves.
Yeah, kind of scalloped edge leaves. It probably is Creeping Charlie. It's a really kind of a difficult plant to get under control. We do have a fact sheet on this particular weed, if you want to get some information, you certainly can apply chemicals for control. Oftentimes, kind of a late season application.
Right after the first frost.
Because that particular plant typically doesn't get frosted right away. And that's a good time to get the chemicals on for control. Sometimes you can also do another application in right as it starts to bloom in the spring. And that combination of the two can get this particular weed under control. And there certainly are lawn care products that are designed for controlling Creeping Charlie because it's a very common lawn problem.
Mm-hmm. You won't kill it in the fall, but you hopefully make it sick enough that it'll winter kill.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks for calling. Ellen in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, you were talking about the powdery mildew and the gentleman with, I believe, the honeysuckles.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, yeah, I know I have that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he didn't know he had it. I know it. Mm-hmm. I know what it is, and I'm wondering how I can prevent it.
Yeah, definitely cutting back and trying to get reestablishment of new vines can definitely have some benefit in removing that disease material from your yard. If it's a chronic problem every year, you may want to consider some sort of chemical treatment. And what we normally recommend for homeowners is sort of a home remedy that was developed based on some research out of Cornell University. And what you use is a tablespoon and a half of baking soda and 3 tablespoons of a lightweight horticultural oil, as light a weight as you can possibly get. And that's mixed in a gallon of water, and it's sprayed as a preventative treatment, so before you see any symptoms.
It's a tablespoon and a half of baking soda.
Yes, and 3 tablespoons of the lightweight horticultural oil. And we usually recommend there's a sun spray oil that's very lightweight that oftentimes will be very useful for this. The oil is a spreading agent to get the material to spread evenly across the leaves. And again, you do this before you start to see symptoms. It's a preventative treatment. And it may not totally control the disease, but typically it gives enough control that you get better growth and the plants don't look quite as ragged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they start out really nice, and I do cut them back at the end of the year because I thought, well, you know, I got to get rid of this. And they start out really nice, and then suddenly later in the summer, all of a sudden we have this powdery mildew.
Powdery mildew fungi, like humid weather, which we tend to get late in the season, the spores tend to be all over the place. And so it's very easy to get reestablishment, even if you're trying to be very careful.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much. And Jason, again, there's actually a local food and brew dinner Saturday night at the Bayfield Pavilion, a place that I really enjoy. You and I've sat next to each other and done shows there.
That's right. It's a great spot. Yeah, so all these products that are featured on the Harvest Trail are going to be, the local chefs are cooking it up into a 6-course feast, and folks can go to the bayfieldharvesttrail.org website to learn more about it, and tickets are available online. Again, it's October 15 through 17 is the Harvest Trail, and the Harvest Trail dinner is that Saturday night. Doors open at 6:30, and everyone's welcome.
So it's still a couple weekends away.
That's right. Yep.
Still got a little time to plan and still have a little time to go online to bayfieldharvesttrail.org and kind of put your order in, too. So that's wonderful. Well, guys, it's a great pleasure. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Definitely.
You bet.
All right. Thank you so much. Brian Huddleston is a plant disease diagnostician with the Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic at UW-Madison and UW-Extension, and Jason Fishbach, Extension Ag Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties. Great to have them with us. He's with UW-Extension as well, and it's great to have both of them with us here on the Ideas Net. Don't forget, if you haven't called in with a contribution, we've got about 400 pledges to go to be able to take off another day of our pledge drive. We've already lost one day. We can take off another day with your help. Just go to WPR.org and make your contribution, and hopefully we'll be able to cut another day off the drive. Taking a look ahead to Monday, Peter Green joins us to talk computing. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.